gender is probably the most restricting force in all aspects of American life. Joining us now is Neil Katz. He is a serial entrepreneur and CEO. He harbors a passion for women's rights, and his lifestyle is centered on self-awareness and love. His novel is called Outrageous, the Victoria Woodhull Saga, Volume 1, Rise to Riches. And it spotlights the gender prejudice. It exposes early manipulation of free markets and reveals how political power structures used prison and seizure of assets to prevent innovation and social change. And Neil Katz, welcome to Life Matters.
Well, thank you for having me on your show, Larry.
Oh, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate that. Neil, I'm going to be honest. I didn't know anything at all about Victoria Woodhull until I really started delving into this and doing the homework that I did for the show. This woman, she was a real warrior. I mean, she was a strong, in addition to being a warrior, she was a very strong supporter of human rights.
Yeah, she was. She was a precursor to a lot of powerful women today. It's a shame that her name is not taught and really expanded upon in school. The only people who know of her, really, are people who studied women's studies and the earliest movements for the suffrage movement, the vote. The current movie, The Suffragette, the...
You're talking about the Meryl Streep film?
Yeah, the new Meryl Streep film. The Pankhurst, although Meryl only has a minute and a half in the film, actually. Pankhurst modeled all of their terminology and all their philosophy on Victoria's writings 35 years earlier.
That's really something. Something I learned, and correct me if I'm wrong, but these early feminists were overwhelmingly pro-life, and I don't know why, but that seemed to surprise me.
Yeah, they were. Matter of fact, when she was the first woman to run for president in 1872, and her campaign platform included some really interesting things. First of all, first and foremost, was women's suffrage. Women didn't have the right to vote. Not only did they not have the right to vote, they weren't legal persons under the law. They had no rights of citizenry. And a man could literally will away a mother's children from her at his death. But her platform for her election was women's suffrage, regulation of monopolies, nationalization of the railroads, an eight-hour workday, direct taxation based on income, abolition of the death penalty, welfare for the poor, and get this, equal wages for equal pay.
How about that? Imagine that.
1872. This woman was phenomenal, and she had to overcome so much adversity. Ultimately, it's a story of hope and the ability to manifest the vision that you hold for yourself. If you work at it and you're willing to dedicate yourself to making that vision a reality.
You know, that's the wonderful message, I think, that I take away from this is how she did overcome that adversity. And, I mean, look what she did and look what she made of her life. Do I understand correctly her and her sister were the first women to own their own newspaper?
Yeah, well, a number of firsts. First of all, they were the first women to open a brokerage and operate a brokerage firm on Wall Street.
That's really amazing.
They did have a powerful partner. His name was Cornelius Vanderbilt. We've probably heard of him.
Imagine that. Okay, sure.
They were the first women to publish a woman-owned newspaper and be the editors. Victoria was the first woman to be invited by Congress to address them. And she was the first woman to run for president.
Now, I understood when she was running for president, they actually put her in prison.
Yes, they did. There was a conflict between her and a very famous Reverend Henry Ward Beecher.
Yes.
And from the Beecher family, Harriet Beecher Stowe, and Lyman Beecher was the father, the fire and brimstone guy. And on fairly trumped up charges, really obscure charges, they imprisoned not only Victoria, but her sister and her husband, and it took quite a while to get them out of prison. Victoria out of prison. They let the husband and the sister go. She wasn't on any of the ballots formally.
Okay.
They wouldn't let that happen. But there were a number of write-in votes, apparently, And pretty amazing story, really. She was also one of the leading proponents for free love. And by that, she didn't mean promiscuity. She meant the right to choose what she wanted to do with her own body. So she said, yes, I am a free lover. I have an inalienable constitutional and national right to love whom I may, to change that love every day if I please, and neither you nor any law you can frame have any right to interfere with my personal life.
And Neil, with that, we're taking a commercial break. Let's pick this conversation up on the other side. You're listening to Life. You're listening to The Patriot, where life matters, coming right back.
Shining bright above you, night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in the sycamore tree, dream a little dream of me.
Oh, welcome back, everyone. Thank you for being with us tonight. Who was America's first female presidential candidate, and why does that even matter? Thank you so much for being with us tonight. If you're just joining us, we're talking with author and charitable entrepreneur Neil Katz. He's the author of the historical novel Outrageous, the Victoria Woodhull Saga, Volume 1, Rise to Riches. Neil, forgive me, but before we had to take that commercial break, just a little bit before, you were talking about a connection with Cornelius Vanderbilt and Victoria Woodhull and the newspaper. And I was going to ask you, how did that connection come to be?
Yeah, that's part of the book. She studied and really went to school trying to learn everything she could about Cornelius Vanderbilt. Then walked into his house and presented herself and her sister. He had a natural affinity for spiritualists, and they both were. And her younger sister did a hands-on magnetic healing for him, something he believed in quite a bit. And he actually was, even his longtime doctor said he was much younger afterwards.
And was he
from the early onset of the relationship all the way through the gold scandal of 1869?
Yes,
which was the imminent collapse of the U.S. economy, much bigger than 2007-2008.
Wow.
And I show the inside story of how that happened.
Fascinating. And that's very interesting. Was he also responsible for then fixing it later?
Well, he actually became smitten with young Tennessee Celeste Claflin, Victoria's younger sister.
Okay.
They had quite the affair, or summer-autumn affair, or what's it called? Older and younger person affair. He was 74 and she was 24.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So but he really did love her, and he ended up marrying someone else towards the end of his life, but because his family demanded it. It's an amazing story. She would not let anything hold her back. And if your listeners want to find it, all they have to do is Google search Outrageous Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
And after three items, which is Victoria's Secret's Outrageous Collection.
Okay.
you'll find a picture of me and a link to the Amazon page. It's only $2.99 on Kindle. So I do have a website. It's the victoriawoodhullsaga.com. But just Google Outrageous Victoria, and you'll find all the other information from there.
Oh, fantastic.
I do want to say congratulations to the Arizona Cardinals. They played a heck of a half of football.
Yeah, right. One half. Okay.
Luckily, the second half, if they put two of halves like that together, they'll probably end up in the Super Bowl.
They'll go well. Say, going back to when she ran for president, do you know what the ticket was that she ran on?
Well, I already told you about her platform. She ran for the Equal Rights Party.
Okay.
Which I think in today's political hemispheres would be sort of like the Libertine Party.
Mm.
But her running mate was as presumptuous and audacious a choice as herself. She chose Frederick Douglass, the great Negro orator. And I use the word Negro intentionally because historically that's correct.
Right.
And incredible statesman and amazing speaker. He never acknowledged the nomination, but he was formally on the ticket and drafted by the party.
How incredible is that? What a combination. Could you imagine her and Frederick Douglass? That would have been something.
That would have shaken some things up.
Yes, that would have.
It was only 8 years after the end of the Civil War, so it was pretty aggressive. I do want to take a second, if I can, and tell you what I'm doing with the proceeds of the book.
Thank you, yes.
Is that okay, Larry?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. I'm actually fostering a new type of funding for charities, specifically charities that can adhere to certain qualifications of paying forward the money, so low-income housing or microfinance, the charity that goes into villages across the world and in America, helping single mothers with small business loans, or minute business loans, really. And it's all based on credit funding. Think of the way you'd help a teenage son. I know you've had this experience a lot, Larry, but a teenage son buys his first car. When you know he's going to be dependable and make the payments, you go to the bank and you sign a guarantee. Well, I have a way to do that for charities with wealthy corporations or wealthy individuals. They'll actually post the CD in the bank, which will help the banking system, but they'll pledge it to the charity. I've worked out a way so they're not at risk, the corporations, and it's going to blow the lid off of the funding that's available to charities worldwide.
I also understand that this is sort of a pay-it-forward kind of a program.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what happens, good example, Home Depot wants to put a $100 million CD in a bank.
Mm-hmm.
They put it in the bank. We get they pledge it as collateral for a $100 million loan to Habitat for Humanity. We go to Berkshire Hathaway or AG Insurance or someone like that, AG Zurich over in Switzerland or Lloyds of London. We get an indemnity policy that tells the investor, the person doing the guarantee, that they'll never lose more than 10%. So their total exposure on the $100 million is $10 million.
Very small.
Everything after that, the insurance company takes care of.
Hmm.
Habitat for Humanity takes the money, builds the home, sells them to low-income people at 40 to 50% of market value. That's their mandate. And they take out mortgages. All the money from all the mortgages go back and pay off the bank, and we're free to do it again.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're just joining us, we're talking with charitable entrepreneur and author Neil Katz. His book is a historical novel called Outrageous, the Victoria Woodhull Saga, Volume 1, Rise to Riches. And the website is the victoriawoodhullsaga.com, and that is Hull, H-U-L-L, hullsaga.com. What a phenomenal program that you put together there.
Well, thank you, Larry. I want to tell the readers that the beginning of the book is a little harsh. It's sort of intentionally 12 years of woman instead of 12 years of slave. It exposes the way women were treated in America, and I don't let up a lot. I want people to really understand how second-class citizen women were, and still are today, the way women are treated. And they've certainly made certain gains, but in a lot of basic things, they have not. And the other thing is that it turns into a really fun love story, an incredible rise to riches story. Horatio Alger would be proud. And the woman just led a phenomenal life. And what's the funnest part of it for me is that she just would not accept any complacency or dictation of normalcy. And she would create something astonishingly new. And she was brilliant, even though she never went past the third grade in education.
Amazing, really, no formal education. Well, I'm curious.
Something she had in common with Cornelius Vanderbilt, by the way. I apologize for interrupting.
Oh, no, thank you. He didn't have much formal education either, is that what you're saying?
Up to the third grade, and he was on a boat at age 9.
That's amazing. That is...
He built a boat empire, a steamship empire, a railroad empire, and a stock portfolio empire with a third grade education.
Wow, what a great story in itself. Yeah. I was going to ask you, what kind of a woman would Victoria Woodhull be today in 2015?
Great question. She'd have elements of different people. Oddly enough, on the political spectrum, there's a little-known woman, a part of the Green Party, named Jill Stein, that should be a lot alike. She was a businesswoman with the brokerage firm, so she'd be a little bit like Carly Fiorina. And she wouldn't let anything stand in her way, and she was tenacious. She also really cared about people with less advantage, the poor. So Hillary Clinton took all the proceeds from her book, It Takes a Village, and donated it to that same kind of charity I was talking about, microfinance, dedicated to FINCA, which is the American arm of microfinance worldwide. So different elements of different people, politically, probably Barry Sanders. Really, the people who are like her are the celebrities that use their name and their clout to promote social programs. So Meryl Streep, Emma Watson, those kind of people.
Can you tell us, what, in your opinion, what does feminism mean today in 2015? And part two to that question, is it different than what it meant back in the 1800s?
Yes, it is. For the 1800s, it was a question of survival and the work to get to the point of at least having equal legal status. Okay, feminism today is, there's really two movements, I believe, under feminism. One is the advancement of those legal rights and trying to get to equality. The other one is trying to introduce feminine archetypal criteria or energies into the culture. And honestly, until we reach a balance between feminine and masculine, we're going to continue getting ourselves in trouble, which we have. Someone asked me recently, I think it was you, Larry, that, you know, have we reached equality or have
oh,
we
yes.
reached balance?
Off air, yeah. I mentioned, I asked that, yes.
Yeah, you did. Between feminism and masculine, my answer was, is there a war being waged anywhere? When we reach the full balance between feminine and masculine throughout the stratums of culture and in our political arena, then there won't be so many wars being waged.
And we need to balance the scales, you say. How do we do that? What do we need to do?
Well, I think the first one is to know our history. I call it herstory, H-E-R-S-T-O-R-Y, and start acknowledging the contributions of women. There's been some good articles on the websites and on the internet of the incredible contributions of women scientists, of women doctors. There's actually been a woman running for president since 1872, not any more than two or three cycles would go by without a woman actually running for president, but no one knows that history. So I think the biggest thing, and the reason this is so important to me, is I want to make Victoria iconic. You know, when fourth graders say, I'm going to study someone and give a little speech in class, and they dress up as her, and most girls do Amelia Earhart or Helen Keller or someone like that, Victoria should be one of the very first choices. So I think the way we start is acknowledging the past, acknowledging the contribution, but also just developing a true respect for the contribution that's available through women and through the feminine archetype and mentality.
St. Neil, I only have about 30 seconds left. Hard to answer this, I'm sure, but why don't we hear more about her? How come I never heard about her when I was in school?
They crucified her. They buried her. They imprisoned her wrongfully. She went up against the conservative right, and they wrote her out of history. And then for a while, she wanted to be written out of history because she went over to England, recreated herself, and had an incredible life for another 48 years. So she helped hide the story for a while, but the powers that be really didn't want her story known.
Amazing.
So after that, when she hid it herself, it became pretty buried.
Wow. Neil, I want to thank you. I'm up against my clock. I thank you
thank
for
you,
spending
Larry.
Some time with us tonight.
Great to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.